once again, a big round of applause to Jose Silva and the Nicaraguan group Toro Huaco. Thank you. They appeared last year at the Folk Festival, and it's just been our pleasure to have them back again. Now we're going to go to a little quieter, little more intimate type of presentation. We have a seminal storyteller that will be joining us. She has been in the Folklife area telling stories all day, and her ride is picking her up right now. So we'll just reset the stage. Everyone stay comfortable. Don't leave. And we'll be going on to Seminole Storytelling. We are back on schedule. One thing I would like to say at this time, for those of you who are interested, at 4 o'clock on the Old Marble Stage, the Florida Folk Heritage Awards are being presented now. And this might be something that you would like to go see. The reception for the three Heritage Award winners will be in the storytelling building directly behind me. For those of you that are not able to go on down to the Old Marble Stage but would like to express your honor to the three recipients of the Florida Folk Heritage Awards. For your information, the three people who are receiving the awards this year, Don Grooms from Gainesville, Kazuko Law from Gulf Breeze, Florida, and some of you may have seen the beautiful Japanese dancers. Kazuko is from that tradition. And Amelia Fernandez from Key West. And she is representing the tradition of comparsa, which refers to a large group of conga musicians. And they will be receiving these awards from the Secretary of State at this time on the Old Marble Stage. For those of you who were here earlier, Chief Jim Billy was here, and he talked a great deal about the Seminole traditions and Seminole life and what has been passed along to him about Seminole folklore. And I would like to invite all of you to attend the Seminole Family Camp, which is a traditional Seminole camp. It consists of chikis built by the Seminole people here on our Folk Festival site. It's just past the Old Marble Stage. And we have some members from the Seminole tribe that are demonstrating doll making, basket making, and the Seminole patchwork making. They're working specifically with the crafts. There may be some foods that are demonstrated. I'm not aware of that at this time. Also, I see our next performer is arriving, but I will fill you in on what you might expect for the rest of this performance area. At 4:30, Yarko Antoniovich. He's a Ukrainian bandura player. He was here yesterday on this stage. He is wonderful. You don't want to miss him. And then at 5 o'clock, we're going to close out this stage with a local group, Skip Johns and the Travelers, who play bluegrass from Lake City. Now, let me help Mary get set up. We have a chair coming for her, and we will be miking her. One thing I want to tell you about Seminole storytelling, so you will appreciate this. Seminole storytelling is very intimate. It's not something that's done for entertaining in the sense of Mary Johns being here in front of you. It's something that was very personal. It's something the stories were told between mother and daughter, mother and children, mother and family, in a very intimate type of setting. And she spoke about this yesterday and shared with us some of the legends and myths and some personal experience stories that she knows about her culture, the Seminole tribe. And Mary, I'm just so happy that you're back with us again today. We appreciate having her here on our Folklife Area stage, and if y'all will join me in welcoming her.
Oh, okay. Here you go. You hear me all right? Okay. Sometimes when I go to telling stories, I forget that the mic is here. And I'll draw away from it without, you know, realizing sometimes. So if you bear with me, We'll get down to the storytelling. In this storytelling, the way we did it, it was like she said, you know, it was a one-on-one or one to a family. And a lot of times, you know, they didn't act out a whole lot, just quietly sitting and using hand gestures, you know, and because a lot of our language is interpretations of the body, you know, movement. That I think it's not catching on with some of the younger ones because they're, you know, learning to be very vocal rather than reading a person. And I hope it's not, you know, because this seems to be a talent. You know, you can just watch a person and actually see what that person is thinking and what it's going to do, you know, in the next, you know, few minutes. And so I can sit here and I can watch you start to fall asleep or, you know, you get antsy, I can see it. But I'm sure a lot of performers are this way. You know, they can sense an audience. So it was, you know, like my grandmother would sit there and she would talk for a while. And then she would break off and we would go do something, you know, get up and go do something. And then we would come back and I would ask a question or something and they go off on a whole new avenue of thought in philosophy. And it was just all kinds of wonderful things. And today, sitting here, I can think of a story that she used to tell about this ball game. And one of the wonderful things that I have discovered is that Native Americans tell similar stories. It may not have the same characters in it, and it depends on what region you're from. If you're from, say, North Carolina, or if you're from the Southwest, you know, maybe you're Navajo, or, you know, it just depends on where you're located. Your animals, you know, change. Like, for instance, here when we talk about the trickster, it's the rabbit. And the rabbit is the main character in our trickster stories, whereas the Southwest, you're going to find a coyote. And just minor differences like that. And then there are differences within families. It depends on what clan you're from or what part of that family you're from. There are certain slight differences within the stories. So this particular one, I found, I had almost forgotten it. And then I was up in Anniston Museum of Natural History. I was there to tell stories and demonstrate patchwork. And there was this wonderful storyteller, and he was from Cherokee. And he was telling the same story that my grandmother used to tell. But he was using the flying squirrel as the hero. And in our case, it was the bat. Anyway, the story goes like this. One time, they were having, like, you know, people talk, and they say, oh, we're so much better than you guys at this, you know. Or some they would say, oh, no, you're not. We can beat you at it. And so that's what they were doing. And so the birds, they said, oh, we're just great ball players. I mean, we can just keep that ball off the ground for so long that you guys would never have a chance to Wow. It sounds serious. Huh? Oh, no. We were living in the Everglades, and the only thing we ever saw was those airplanes with propellers. That was about the only thing that ever passed overhead at that time. And I guess these were like DC-9, was it? It was big, and it had like four propellers on it. And you could hear it coming from miles away because there was hardly any traffic on 41 at that time. And if a car came by, you could hear it going over each bridge, you know. It would rattle, cut it up, like that as it went over a bridge. You could just hear it until it probably reached US 29, you know, towards Everglades City. I mean, it was that quiet. You can't do that nowadays. I mean, traffic sometimes is almost bumper to bumper down that 41 going towards Miami and to Tampa. Anyway, the animals, the furred animals, you know, they said, I bet you can't beat us because no matter how good you are, you still got to land sometime, you know, because so they were betting each other. And they put up a big purse. And they said, whoever wins, you know, will get all this. And the Indians are, you know, they put their money where their mouth is. I mean, this is, they love a game of chance. So they did that. And so they were choosing up sides. And one of the things that that kind of left the bat out because he was neither bird nor animal. And he was a little bit of both at the same time. And so he was one of the last ones to get picked. And everybody kind of looked at him. He was sitting there, and he said, well, what are we going to do with you, you know? And and so he was feeling pretty bad. And so the animals sent him over to the birds and said, he flies. Maybe he can play with you guys. And the birds sent him back. So he's a furred animal, so he gets to play with y'all. So they finally sent him back to the birds and said, he has to play with you guys because he flies. And so they sent him back saying, he's an animal. He ain't playing with us. So finally the animals decided to accept him. And so he got in the game and they started playing. And sure enough, the birds, you know, they threw the ball into play and that's what they do, you know, at the ceremonial grounds. Usually this is when the competition takes place, sometimes between women and men, and sometimes it's from side to side, you know, mixed. But one of the things that it does, you know, is a pole in the middle, and it's a one-pole game. Now, there's a two-pole game that's played, much like... I guess it's the game lacrosse. If y'all ever seen lacrosse, it's based on this game. And this one is called the Little Brother to War because the two-pole game was used at one time to settle disputes between one territory to another or one tribe to another, or just a dispute between two towns. And now this is a real rough game, but the other one is a social game, the single pole one, and what it is the pole standing there, and if a person throws a ball from this side, and it goes one way, everybody swings to that side, you know, and there's a line through it, and both sides swing around the pole as the ball gets thrown. And so that's how it was for them. But there was also birds were playing the field up there in the sky. And sure enough, they were beginning to beat the animals because they would just snatch the ball up before it hit the ground and throw the ball back, and then the other side will just snatch it up, and they just kept it up in the air. Then finally, the bat came in, and he got in, and he would snatch the ball away from the birds, give it to the animals, and they would score, you know. And so he became the hero, and the animals won the game and beat the birds, and they got the prizes, you know, that was offered. And this was sort of a story that was told to me because I was growing too fast, you know. And at 13 years old, I was fully grown, and I was always a head, shoulder higher than the rest of my classmates. And it was real awkward to me, you know. And so my grandmother, you know, picked this particular story to make me feel better about myself, that once everybody grew up, that it won't matter so much how tall you are, because some of those little ones that are looking up at me now will be taller than I am later. And so sure enough, it was. But it sure did make me feel a lot better about myself. I mean, your personal appearance is not what matters, but what's in your heart, and, you know, and what's in your, the way you think about yourself is what matters. So another story that has to do with the bat was, see, we have many, many stories in which we tell children the origins of things, you know, to make them understand, like, anomalies, you know, things that don't really fit into one category or another, but are, like, in between. And one of the things that was told about the bats, to explain this part, was that this young gentleman was traveling a long ways from home, and he was going from one village down here to a long ways off to another village. And in his travels, he came upon these mountain ranges that he had to go through. And while he was walking through these rocks, the rocks, you know, just kind of ate through his moccasins, and he had big holes in his sole. But he had patching material in his pocket, you know, so he wasn't worried. And so one evening, he just had to patch up those shoes. It was just getting so bad, they weren't protecting his feet much. So after he had his supper, he was sitting just enjoying the quiet of the evening and stitching up these shoes. And he was cutting pieces out of a piece of suede and like rawhide, you know, he was patching the soles and making it feel better. So he was cutting pieces of this and pieces of that, and he was sewing, not minding anything, just taking pieces of it, throwing it over his shoulder, you know. He's a long ways from anybody around, and a little bit of trash isn't going to hurt anybody, you know. So he just finished cutting it. He just threw it over his shoulder. Pretty soon, he was aware of these things flickering around him. And he thought, what are those? He took a good look, and it looked like pieces of leather flying around. And so he looked behind him to see if the pieces of leather was back there. And no, the pieces of leather were not there. So he sat back down, you know, and he kind of wearily cut out another piece and threw it over his shoulder. This time he followed it. It never hit the ground. It just took off. And it was, you know, it just joined the rest of those pieces flying around him. And so this is how bats got to be. That's why they're neither animal or bird, but they can fly. And they can't see very good, but they can see, you know. And they're very special creatures that help us by eating bugs, you know, that mosquitoes and other pests. So I guess, you know, it was a very magical place that he was in and didn't realize that. Because there are places like that, you know, places where things can happen that you never know. You just don't. There are other stories about things happening like that. Some were done on purpose. And one of the stories is about the possum. Possum doesn't fit into, you know, he's an animal, but he's the only one that's got a pouch in which he raises the young, you know. Here in America, anyway, I mean, there's like kangaroos and other, you know, marsupials in other countries, but that's the only animal here that would be categorized as a marsupial here in America is the possum. And they're nighttime feeders. They're nocturnal. So they went out, they go out at night to eat. So that's what she was doing, this possum lady, you know. And she had a bunch of youngsters, I mean, maybe even 24 of them, just a bunch of them. And she had them secreted away in a hollow tree. And there was a chimney up at the top because the tree was broken off. But it was sheltered from the rain, so she kept her babies in there. And it was getting on towards dark, and she was ready to go out and eat. So she took off. And boy, it felt good to stretch her legs, you know, and she walked down to the river, have a drink of water. And then she started picking, you know, berries and stuff to eat and turn over a piece of dead wood and get some grubs out from underneath. And it was just wonderful to get out. So she had a great time just eating. And when she was good and full, it was getting on towards morning time. So she was coming home. Well, as she came closer and closer to her hollow tree, she heard this sound. It was singing. And it sounded like a whole bunch of people just sitting around singing. And what had happened was while she was out, it was on towards morning time. And bats are also nocturnal. And so they have to sleep during the day. And this bunch of, a particular bunch of bats were looking for a place to stay because they didn't really have a place, you know, to sleep. So they found this hollow tree, you know, and it had a chimney up to the top. They could just fly in, and then when they got ready, they could just fly out again. So they flew in, and they got all the way down to the bottom. And what they found were these cute little pink things. And they were just tiny and pretty. They're real pretty. And one of the bats picked up a little possum and stood it up on his legs, you know, by holding it up under its arms. And when he started bouncing the baby, you know, went like this and started stamping its foot. And while it was doing that, the little tail was a little ringlet that just bounced up and down behind them, and it created a rhythmic sight. So they started singing with the little baby possum. And they sang, honey pa wele, honey pa wele, cha sha cha sha wele, willum, 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 like that. And all those bats were singing and just, you know, having a good time. And Mama Possum now was coming up to the